The House comes now to oral questions, the first in the name of Chloe Swarbrick.
To the Prime Minister, does he stand by all of his government's statements and actions?
Yes, and especially our announcement yesterday that the government is taking action to support young families with the cost of living crisis. Family Boost will help to reduce pressure from the cost of ECE and support families to be able to get ahead. And from the 1st of July, parents of young children can get back up to 25% of their weekly fees, up to a maximum of $75 per week. We also want to support families who face financial challenges returning to the workforce, and ECE fees are a big barrier for when parents face when they head back to work, and I'm telling you, Family Boost is going to help them with that, and that's what this government's about doing.
Does he stand by his statements that tax deductibility changes will reduce rents, or would he like to revise that in light of advice that his government has received that rents are primarily driven by household income and relative supply and demand for housing?
Across housing in New Zealand, we have a supply challenge. We have a supply challenge whether you want to own a house, whether you want to rent a house, or whether you want to secure one in social state housing. What we're doing is making sure that we can ensure that actually there's downward pressure on rents, because passing costs on to landlords that end up leading to higher rents is not an acceptable answer.
Supplementary question, Chloe Swarbrick.
What is a better use of $2.9 billion? Tax cuts for landlords, or retention of food in schools, expanding fees-free tertiary education and retaining free prescriptions with money left over?
Well, what I can say is I've seen a lot of commentary about school lunches. School lunches will continue to be funded. We just want to make sure that the system is more effective, that wastage is removed, and there's a better way to deliver it at lower cost. We'll look to do that.
Honourable David Seymour.
Is the Prime Minister aware that the advice the member alluded to about the effects of mortgage interest deductibility on rental housing continued on to say that in the long run reductions in rents could be expected? And would he advise members as a matter of general practice to read all the evidence instead of selectively quoting some?
Yeah.
Well, what I can say is that When the previous government actually removed interest deductibility, they received advice to say that that would likely put upward pressure. It puts downward pressure on rents. Passing costs on to landlords that only get passed through to renters with higher rents isn't the way forward.
Supplementary.
Chloe Swarbrick.
What's the better use?
Wait. Some people on your side of the House were offering comment. Now that that's over, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and my colleagues in Labor. Supplementary, what is a better use of $2.9 billion? Tax cuts for landlords, or maintaining Jobs for Nature, which provides investment in conservation projects and jobs in rural communities, and doubling the funding for the Department of Conservation?
Well, look, I can tell you we're a government that's going to rebuild this economy, and that means that we are going to make sure... Well, listen to what I'm about to say. We're going to make sure that we actually make sure government spending is very effective so that we actually protect our frontline services. We are going to give low and middle income working people tax relief. It's something that the Labor and the Greens Party used to believe in. They were people that they used to support, but they don't seem to care about it anymore. And ultimately, we're going to work out how to grow this economy. And we have a great future ahead of us, and that's what we're going to balance in our budget.
Supplementary. Has his government wound down MBIE's Just Transitions unit, and if so, how many more climate change jobs are on the chopping block?
Well, what we're interested in is actually delivering on our climate change goals. That's actually what matters here. The means by which we deliver those goals may differ from the previous administration, but our commitment is incredibly strong to deliver those commitments.
Does he stand by the statements from his Minister for Regulation that risks to endangered native dolphins' lives are the equivalent to driving a car? And if so, are we to expect that this government will wind back marine protection in line with their war on nature?
I reject the premise of that question in the way that was characterised.
Point of order, the Honourable David Seymour.
I just want to be clear to the House, I've made no such statement. However, some people are unable to understand the point of an analogy about risk rather than literally suggesting dolphins would drive cars.
Okay. Thank you for that. We'll have the question again, but bear in mind what has just been now must be taken as the word of the House.
Does he stand by the statements of his Minister for Regulation making equivalences between the risks to endangered native dolphins' lives and driving a car? And if so, are we to expect that this government is going to wind back marine protection in line with their war on nature?
I can't say that. Point of order.
Point of order, the Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Speaker, a question must be substantiated, and that last statement is utterly outside of parliamentary order and will lead to disorder if she's allowed to get away with it.
Speaking to the point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Well, okay.
I can very happily table the likes of the Environmental Defence Society's many press releases which speak to this government's agenda being a war on nature.
Doesn't make it right.
The member is not here as an advocate for anybody other than those who voted for her. And I think the question in the first place was borderline and now has gone over that. Yeah. So try again with another question. Yep, no, I'm giving you an extra one.
An extra one. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Unbelievable generosity given the circumstances.
What then is a better use of $2.9 billion? Is it tax breaks for landlords or half-price public transport fares which ease costs for struggling families and help us to meet our climate emission goals?
We make no apologies for being on the side of renters in New Zealand. We care deeply about folk in New Zealand who are renting properties. The previous administration loaded costs up on landlords and they got passed through to renters with higher rents, $170 more on average every single week. We're on the side of renters. We're taking action to make sure we can do something about it.
Question number two, in the name of the Right Honourable Chris Hipkins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Prime Minister, does he stand by all of his government's statements and actions?
Yes, and in particular our commitment to deliver tax relief for hard-working New Zealanders. In stark contrast that member who's embarking on yet another campaign to raise taxes. Because it seems that no matter the circumstances, the solution offered by that member's party is always more tax. Strong economy, more tax. Weak economy, more tax.
Point of order.
Following the precedent set by David Seymour, well, the statement the Prime Minister has just made is incorrect. I therefore ask that he desist from making it.
That's right. The Prime Minister can withdraw that part, but continue with his answer.
Withdraw and apologise. What I'd say to you very clearly in that member's policy is to increase taxes. We know what the economic agenda of the Labor Party is. It's spend more, borrow more, tax more. That's something that we're not going to do in our government.
Point of order, Right Honourable Chris Hipkins.
Mr Speaker, that is also incorrect.
Yeah, look, they... Yeah, I know, and I'm trying to come up with a wise ruling. Give me a minute. It's well known that the government can't use questioned opportunity to attack opposition policy. That's not how it works. And so an answer that leaves that out, I think it's not beyond the bounds of the Prime Minister's capability to address the House.
Look, yes, I am incredibly proud of our commitment to deliver tax relief to hard-working, low- and middle-income working New Zealanders, unlike the other side.
Supplementary. On what date did he first become aware that his government had cut entitlements to disability support services and respite care?
Well, that's just not true. There has been no reduction in the funding and the disabilities budget compared to what the previous government funded in the year before. And further, we have made a commitment to increase funding this year, and as we go through a budget process, there'll be further increases as well.
Supplementary question. Did Penny Simmons request a pre-budget commitment to boost disability support funding to Whaikaha?
As I said, we've been working to the previous government's budget. There has been an overspend and an overrun. There has been more money put into the ministry for this year, and there will also be more money put into the budget 24 process as well.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Point of order, Right Honourable Chris Hipkins.
Question was very specific as to whether or not a pre-budget commitment had been sought, and the Prime Minister hasn't addressed that.
Well, I think he did when he said that they have a budget process and we're working to the previous budget's pre-budget, working to the previous government's budget. I think that's a reasonable addressing of the question.
Did Penny Simmons or her office advise his office of the changes to entitlements to disability support services and respite care prior to Whaikaha's announcement on the 18th of March? If so, when did they advise him?
Well, what I'd say firstly in response to that is that the Minister and the Ministry have actually apologised for the anxiety that they caused through what was a poor communication of changes to the policy settings. We also have ensured that any future frontline changes to policy settings in the Ministry of Disability, Disabled Services will actually be brought before Cabinet as well.
Point of order, Mr Speaker. The question was whether the Prime Minister or his office was told about it before the announcement was made. And again, the Prime Minister hasn't come even close to addressing it.
Well, it's one of those questions that's got a yes or no answer, isn't it? Which you can't ask essentially in this house.
There's also on what date he was asked. I mean, some indication addressing the question. He's talked about what the government are doing going forward, not actually what the question was about, which was whether or not he knew about it before the announcement was made.
Yeah, I think the Prime Minister could elucidate a bit on that.
Look, as I've said before, the Ministry made changes to the policy settings. They were poorly communicated and they did not go through Cabinet. That is why it caused unnecessary anxiety and confusion, for which we apologise. The Minister and the Ministry have subsequently apologised for that.
Point of order, Mr Speaker. The Prime Minister's indicated the decision didn't go through Cabinet. He hasn't indicated whether or not he knew about it before it was announced.
Well, given that the agenda of Cabinet, the member, more than many others in this House would know, is set by the Prime Minister. So I would assume that you've got the answer that you need.
Point of order, Mr Speaker. Prime Ministers don't receive only information that goes to Cabinet. They receive information that ministers on decisions ministers are making every day. I'm asking the Prime Minister whether he knew about this decision before it was announced. It shouldn't be a difficult question.
That's a fair question, given it's the nature of it. The Prime Minister could answer that.
I was unaware of that and it did not go through Cabinet.
Does he agree with Penny Simmons' decision to reduce entitlements for disability support, respite care, insulin pumps and glucose monitors for disability communities? If not, why not?
Well, what I'd say is very important to the community is that they need to know we have been working to the previous government's budget. We are putting more money in this year to make sure that any cost overruns are actually being able to be managed. And importantly, there is further increases in the budget coming in Budget 24. What I've also ensured is that any future changes to frontline services are actually brought forward to the Cabinet. And importantly, we also need to make sure that there is ongoing money, but also an ongoing review to make sure that money is being spent appropriately and it actually gets the people who are disabled and actually need those core support services.
About his confidence in his minister that he is now stopping her from making any decisions in this portfolio without taking them to Cabinet first.
I have complete confidence in the minister. By her own admission and that of her ministry, she's apologised for the confusion and the anxiety that those changes were poorly communicated and poorly consulted on, but we've made changes to the process going forward and that's a good thing.
Question number 3, in the name of Dr. Palmjee Palmer.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Workplace Relations and Safety. What recent announcements has she made in her portfolio?
Mr Speaker. Mr Speaker, I recently announced my priorities, which are intended to restore business confidence and certainty. That is the way businesses are able to create more and better jobs, which is better for Kiwi workers. My priorities are related to the Holidays Act, contractors' arrangements, health and safety law and reform, and performance metrics for public services. Over the last 6 years, employers would be forgiven for feeling like they have been pitted against workers. But I believe that the frustrations both employers and workers are facing are connected. Labour market regulations are becoming increasingly complex, making it harder for employers and workers to reach solutions that work for both of them. Flexible labour markets are the best environment for businesses to grow. When businesses thrive, the economy thrives.
Supplementary, Mr Speaker.
Palmjee Palmer.
What is she planning to do to improve certainty in contracting relationships?
Mr Speaker, an important change I intend on making comes from the ACT National Coalition Agreement. It includes a commitment to better protect choice and freedom to contract for workers and businesses. I have asked my officials for advice on how to achieve certainty for contracting parties, so that their intent when entering into a contract for services is upheld. Many New Zealand businesses use contractors in situations where engaging an employee to do the work would be inappropriate or not as effective. And I understand that 90% of contractors report that they are satisfied or very satisfied with their jobs and that they would prefer to continue being self-employed rather than to have a paid job working for someone else?
Supplementary, Mr. Speaker.
Pumpy pump.
Is the Minister planning to make changes to the Holidays Act?
Mr. Speaker, I want to confirm that delivering improvements to the Holidays Act to simplify and clarify the law is one of my top priorities. I understand that change has been a long time coming. The previous government's Holidays Act Task Force began work in 2018, but were not able to deliver on changes by the end of their term in government. I've heard from many a small business who spends a lot of time trying to comply with the Holidays Act rather than getting on with their core business. The first action that I'm going to take is to make sure that any changes to the Act are workable, that they are a material improvement on the status quo. And one of the reasons why it's taken so long to deliver change is that the previous government's proposals were so complex that it was very difficult to get draft legislation. If the draft legislation is hard, then it's going to be very difficult to implement.
Just an answer. Thank you.
Supplementary.
Camilla Bellich.
Will the Minister guarantee that no employee will have a reduction in entitlements due to her proposed Holidays Act changes?
Mr. Speaker, I'm intending on consulting widely about the Holidays Act changes, and I look forward to the member being part of that consultation.
Supplementary, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What reforms to health and safety is she planning?
The Health and Safety at Work Act is now almost 10 years old, and I think it's an appropriate time that we take a step back and assess whether the health and safety system is fit for purpose. Businesses want to keep people safe and healthy at work, and workers want to keep themselves and their colleagues safe and healthy at work. But one of the things I hear consistently is that businesses and workers alike either struggle to understand the reason for some of the costly health and safety regulations, or they are struggling to know what to do in order to comply. So we want to simplify and clarify the law for both workers and businesses. But before we embark on that reform, I want to hear from workers, I want to hear from businesses, and I want to hear from people who know how to keep workers safe at work. And so we will be starting public consultation.
Very good.
Question number four, the name of Tim Costley.
To the Minister of Finance, what announcements has she made recently about supporting low and middle income families?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday we announced that from 1 July, low to middle income parents with early childhood education costs will be able to claim back up to 25% of their early childhood education fees to a maximum of $75 a week. Families who qualify for the maximum reimbursement will receive $975 in their bank accounts from October, and another $975 every 3 months thereafter. This new Family Boost initiative will provide real relief for families struggling with the cost of living.
Supplementary. How many families and children will benefit from Family Boost?
Mr. Speaker, many families are struggling with high housing, childcare and daily living costs. An estimated 21,000 low to middle income families will qualify for the maximum reimbursement of $975 every 3 months. And in total, Family Boost will help support more than 140,000 children and their families. I am very proud that this government is able to provide extra assistance to support so many hard-working New Zealand families.
Supplementary. How can Kiwi families access this support?
Mr. Speaker, to ensure the repayment goes swiftly and accurately to eligible parents and their caregivers, early childhood invoices are submitted directly through IR's online system, MyIR, which I am advised can be used from a phone. Parents and caregivers will be able to submit ECE invoices every 3 months, with Family Boost refunded as a lump sum. Inland Revenue is currently talking to the early childhood sector about the best way to make this as simple as possible. And overnight, I am advised that early childhood services are already considering measures to make this as easy as possible for the parents they serve, including talking to their IT providers about issuing 3 monthly invoices and assisting parents to upload these to the IRD.
What are the other benefits of Family Boost?
Well, Mr. Speaker, childcare is one of the biggest costs for families, and members of this House who have had young children will know that full well. According to the OECD, childcare costs in New Zealand are among the highest in the world, at 37% of household income. Being able to afford early childhood education fees can be a barrier to entering the workforce, particularly for a second earner in a household. Family Boost will make it easier and more worthwhile for families with young children to work by directly assisting them to pay those ECE fees.
Honourable Jantonetti.
Does she agree the announcement made yesterday is hundreds of millions of dollars less support to families than the previous government's Early Childhood Education Budget 23 support package, which scrapped?
Mr. Speaker, I'd reject that as a false analogy, because actually it's hypothetical. And the reason for that is there were serious questions raised by early childhood providers and others about where the commitments made by the previous government were even deliverable at all. It was a phantom policy, and I tell you a really big difference. This money, this cold hard cash, goes direct into the bank accounts of parents. There is no middleman or woman. This is real cost of living relief for New Zealand families.
Supplementary.
The Honourable David Seymour.
Will the government actually allow for the Family Boost policy in the costings it does in its budget? And is that a general policy of the government to actually put aside money to fund the things it promises the public? Or will this government simply make it up and hope to lose the election so someone else can inherit the problem?
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Minister makes a very good point.
Point of order, the Honourable Kieran McNulty.
How on earth was that fitting with the requirements of Speaker's rulings and standing orders, given that it was clearly designed to make a political point?
Well, the point is that every question is designed to make a political point. And the second part of it is that there was no mention of other governments' or previous governments' policies. It was as much a, I suppose, on the edge of standing orders as the question in the first place. So on that basis, it's not
order.
Out.
On that basis...
A different point of order?
Yes, it is. Yep. On that basis, Mr. Speaker, speaking generally, if a question involves a hypothetical scenario, then that too should be ruled out.
And that is the case in standing orders, it can be. But that would leave us with a very, very bland question time. Given that today there's actually four questions that I think of the ultimate blandness, that's not looking good for the House and the public information that's supposed to come from it. So that won't always be the case, but I appreciate your pointing out what is currently in standing orders. 319. The Honourable Christopher Bishop.
I just wonder if for the House's elucidation you could outline what the four sort of bland questions you were referring to are.
Oh, no, no. I think members of Parliament are well and truly capable of working out what is bland and what's not. Can we then progress with the balance of that answer, which I'm sure will be brief.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister makes a very good point, and yes, our government has learned the lessons of history, where previous governments announced poorly costed, funded and poorly consulted early childhood education policies.
Yeah,
We have chosen to announce this policy early.
Stop there, otherwise I'll get a barrage of points of order over here, and they would be right. Tim Crossley.
Supplementary.
Point of order, David Seymour. Honourable David Seymour.
Mr. Speaker, I'm a member of this House, so I'd like my question addressed. Is the government intending to put aside the money to actually allow this policy to be funded?
Then you should have asked that simple question, rather than the bits that elicited the balance of the argument.
Addressed, Mr. Speaker.
Well, I'll tell you what, because I'm a reasonable person, if you can ask the question again without the sideswipe, that would be great.
Mr. Speaker, seeking a clarification, that's an extra supplementary question, correct?
No, it simply replaces the one that you've got, not adding to your list. You're not going to eat into your total by asking again. Get on with it.
So, well, I'd like the Minister of Finance to tell the House, has the government set aside in its budgeting adequate funds to show that the statements of the government coming out at budget time will actually indicate enough money is available to fund this family boost policy?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. This policy has been fully funded with $723 million provided over the forecast period, and the budget will reflect that. I think it's really important that members of this House understand this fact. We have costed this policy based on 100% uptake, because we want every single family in New Zealand who qualifies for this policy to know that the funding is there for them. So get out there, members opposite, tell the people in your electorates that there's money coming for them.
Don't need that. It's very helpful, I'm sure. But Tim Costley.
Has the Minister seen any reaction to the Family Boost announcement?
Mr. Speaker, I've seen a lot of very positive reactions to yesterday's announcement. Many from mums and dads who really need this cash. I've also seen reaction from those in the early childhood education sector. For example, the New Shoots Children's Centre's director said, quote, "Parents are definitely doing it tough, like everybody in New Zealand, so I think any support for parents is going to be brilliant." And the Early Childhood Education Council chief executive said, quote, "It will be just such a welcome relief for parents who have been facing such high childcare costs." And Mr. Speaker, they are right, and it is a shame that some people opposite have sour grapes about relief for working parents.
Question number 5, in the name of the Honourable Barbara Edmonds.
Pakahe pai, lahi lele, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Finance. Does she stand by her commitment not to cut frontline services?
Mr. Speaker, yes, I stand by the full text of that commitment, which I spoke to at the Finance and Expenditure Select Committee, and where I went on to say, in committing to frontline services, we are not committing to doing things the way they have always been done, necessarily, because actually, we think there's a strong case for improving the delivery of frontline services. And in some cases, it may be that the services that New Zealanders are receiving, whether it's from their hospital or their school, aren't actually delivering the results they want. And so we are not going to ban ourselves from looking at other ways we could do things better, differently, that we can ensure the resources we are deploying have a bigger impact for the people we are seeking to serve.
Supplementary.
Barbara Evans. Honourable Barbara Evans.
Thank you. Does she consider the additional staff at IRD processing over 7 million invoices a year for her ECE tax credit a back office function? If so, how fast can parents expect their childcare rebate to be paid into their bank account?
Mr. Speaker, I would consider it a back office function, and I think it's important that all back office functions are as efficient as possible. We're currently in consultation with the early childhood sector to work out how we make the delivery of this policy as efficient as possible. It's our expectation that this rebate be delivered as quickly as possible, and that's why we're consulting.
Supplementary. Will she reverse her government's decision to remove eligibility for funding for diabetes monitors that allow carers to sleep through the night without having to worry about sudden death from a slump in glucose levels?
Well, Mr. Speaker, if the member wishes to ask questions about the disability services portfolio, she should put them on notice to that minister.
Supplementary. Is she confident that none of the changes proposed in the recent restructuring documents released by the Ministries of Health, Primary Industries, Ethnic Communities, Pacific Peoples, Customs and other ministries will impact frontline services?
Mr. Speaker, that is the expectation we have conveyed to Chief Executives.
Supplementary. Does she agree with John Key that her commitment to fully fund her tax changes through public service cuts is too hard and risks plunging the country into discontent, as reported by the New Zealand Herald?
Mr. Speaker, John Key would be very unhappy to hear the member opposite mischaracterise his comments in that way. And I would put to her that we should have honour in this House in the comments that we make and how we represent others. Yeah.
Point of order.
Point of order, the Honourable Kerr McNally.
Mr Speaker, there is, as has been referred to in this House a number of times, and as was used to in reference to your response to the Honourable David Seymour earlier, is that we take members by their word. Barbara Edmund was quoting John Key. If the Minister disagrees with that, she should say so. She should not be questioning the honour of members in this House in order to respond to a fair question.
Yeah, all members elected to this House are considered honourable members, and so that is a reference that perhaps not best made. Would the Minister like to say further on that?
I think it is very important, Mr Speaker, that when members represent others by way of paraphrase, that they take care to be very accurate.
I think a withdrawn apology for the dishonourable point would be helpful.
Sorry?
I think a withdrawn apologise, a statement of withdrawal apologise, apology for the reference to the dishonourable nature of members would be helpful to the whole House.
I withdraw and apologise.
Thank you. Come now to Honourable Barbara Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Supplementary. Is she committed to meeting the $2.8 billion Treasury estimates as required to maintain the level of existing services for the impact for forecasted inflation and wage growth?
Mr Speaker, we have previously made clear our commitment to ensure that there is more funding available for frontline services.
Thank you. We come now to question number six, the name of Dana Kirkpatrick.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Infrastructure. What steps is the government taking to address New Zealand's infrastructure deficit?
The Honourable Chris Bishop.
Mr Speaker, this morning I laid out the steps the government is taking to close New Zealand's infrastructure deficit. Estimates vary on the size, but let's call it $100 billion or more. It's 80 transmission gully motorways. We have outlined a plan to fix this deficit. Firstly, doing a better job of maintaining our existing assets. Secondly, a credible pipeline of infrastructure projects. As part of that, developing a national infrastructure plan over 30 years. Thirdly, reducing the barriers that are holding back infrastructure delivery, such as the RMA. Fourthly, improving value for money. And fifthly, new ways of funding and financing infrastructure.
Dana Kirkpatrick.
What will the 30-year national infrastructure plan involve?
Mr Speaker, I've asked the Infrastructure Commission to develop a 30-year national infrastructure plan by the end of next year. This will include a national view of infrastructure projects that are planned and are being planned, an assessment of infrastructure priorities and an analysis of long-term infrastructure needs. The purpose of the plan, Mr Speaker, is to demonstrate a pipeline of major projects that make New Zealand a place worth doing business. We need the talent and the capital in this country, and part of that is to demonstrate the scale of the opportunities in the coming decade. The 30-year plan will help get our infrastructure system humming again.
Supplementary. What did the Minister say about the government's proposal to establish a national infrastructure agency?
Well, Mr Speaker, we'll be establishing a new national infrastructure agency by 2025 to connect offshore capital with New Zealand domestic infrastructure opportunities, amongst other jobs. Mr Speaker, the public sector infrastructure landscape is a crowded one, and there are overlapping roles and functions. So rather than rushing into establishing a new agency, I've commissioned a piece of work to fully understand what the Crown wants and needs from a high-performing infrastructure system and who's doing what in the system and what needs to change. Treasury's leading this work alongside the Infrastructure Commission, and I'll have more to say on that very soon.
How does the government intend to improve and increase the use of infrastructure funding and financing tools?
Oh, Mr Speaker, the Coalition Government's very open to opportunities for the private sector to invest its capital to deliver high-quality infrastructure for New Zealand. These projects leveraging private finance obviously need to stack up based on cost-benefit analysis and the public good. And to pave the way for more projects that leverage private finance, I'm asking officials to modernise the Crown's infrastructure governance, procurement, funding and financing and asset management policies and frameworks. Solving New Zealand's infrastructure challenges will be hard, but with a good plan and a clear target, we can do it and this government will deliver.
Question number seven, the name of Tania Unkovich.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Seniors. What recent reports has she seen regarding the aged care sector?
Mr Speaker, on the 7th of March, the Aged Care Commissioner released her first report titled Amplifying the Voices of Older People Across Aotearoa New Zealand. The report is drawn on engagement with thousands of people from our important older communities alongside their families, whānau, carers and service providers. The report is consistent with and aligns to what I've been hearing from the older New Zealanders and advice I have received around opportunities to better support aged care services going forward.
Supplementary. Is the Minister aware of any ongoing work to address opportunities to improve aged care services?
Mr. Speaker, a review into aged care funding and service models is underway, and I expect it will create a pathway to deliver better care for older people. The review will emphasise some key points, among these a stronger focus on supporting New Zealanders to receive the support they need at home. Additionally, we must ensure more efficient transitions through aged care services, as well as greater capacity to support those with complex needs. I've asked for advice on immediate vulnerabilities and what is needed to sustain capacity while this work is being completed.
Supplementary question. What other initiatives are underway to better support the lives of older New Zealanders?
Mr. Speaker, this government knows that supporting seniors across all aspects of their lives is critical for safeguarding their health and wellbeing. That's why improving the lives of seniors is stated as a priority for the government in our coalition agreements. The Office for Seniors, in collaboration with other departments, has been progressing work on coalition priorities, including upgrading the benefits of the Super Gold and Veterans Card, building on the local government rates rebate scheme, and making it easier to build subsidiary dwellings that can be used to support multi-generational living. I have been meeting with key stakeholders across the sector who have been open about the opportunities to better support seniors across New Zealand. Finally, we have a dedicated, capable and committed workforce and NGO sector who I applaud for their ongoing efforts to respond to the needs of our older people.
Question number 8, in the name of Priyanka Radhakrishnan. Honourable Priyanka Radhakrishnan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Disability Issues. Does she stand by her statement in the House, quote, "No disabled person will lose access to funding for essential services," unquote? If so, why are insulin pumps and diabetes monitors being excluded from FICAHA's disability support funding?
Honourable Penny Simmons.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, I do stand by my statement. Diabetes is a serious health condition affecting many New Zealanders, and I'm advised that avenues such as Health New Zealand and PharmAct to support New Zealanders to gain access to funding for insulin pumps and monitors. The expectation is that health devices to address health conditions are dealt with under Vote Health. If, however, these have previously been funded with disability funding, I am clear that continuity of service continues for those individuals while these funding services are clarified.
What does she say to carers who are concerned that defunding these critical devices will lead to an increase in dead-in-bed syndrome?
So I have sought clarification from FICAHA whether these monitors are funded through third-party providers under the previous rules with disability funding. I am clear, absolutely clear, that we must ensure that access is available if there have been people that have received them through disability services prior to the 18th of March. But I will be asking FICAHA to work with those individual families to see whether they have been accessing health support where it is appropriate. Mr. Speaker, this highlights the issues that we are working with FICAHA. They are working to a budget that was put in place by a previous government that was insufficient in terms of being able to meet needs. It has also had to put in place guidelines, and so it is important that we review the systems, processes, financial management and the policy settings so that funding is coming from the appropriate source.
listed as speech therapy for a 17-year-old non-verbal, severely intellectually disabled young man, effective support that should be funded through FICAHA's disability support funding? If not, why not?
Again, we have asked FICAHA to ensure that they are working with families where there are essential services needed for the disabled person to be able to function. They will be working with them to ensure those services and equipment is provided.
Does she agree with David Seymour that her government has gone too far in its cuts and that, quote, we do have a responsibility in our society to help people who genuinely have no other source of help and have no other way of changing their situation, unquote? And if so, will she reinstate flexibility of funding while she works with the impacted communities on a longer-term solution?
Good question.
Mr. Speaker, it needs to be very, very clear that there has been no cut in funding. There has been additional funding given to get FICAHA through to the end of the year. FICAHA have been working to a budget that was put in place by the previous government, which was insufficient for the policy settings they were working to. We have further indicated that there will be additional funding put in place. There is no cut in funding.
What does the minister say to the woman who emailed to say, and I quote, "Today I found out from Enliven Disability Support Services and my psychologist that government has said I cannot use my funding to pay for psychology sessions despite it meeting the 4 purchasing guidelines outlined by FICAHA. For me, it was the pathway to rehabilitation, successful social interactions and managing crippling anxiety, and I was hoping to return to work in the not-too-distant future. Now, that has been taken away from me," unquote.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not aware of the individual case, but the member has answered the question herself if she said that it met the guidelines of the funding. Therefore, if it meets the guidelines of the funding, it should be funded.
Question number 9, the name of Katie Nimmin.
To the Minister of Education, what recent announcements has she made on period products in schools?
The Honourable Erica Stanford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm thrilled to announce this government has increased funding to ensure free period products are available for all young women in intermediate, kura and secondary schools. It's through careful spending this government has redirected funding to where it matters most, learners and schools. We're committed to ensuring that all young women have equal opportunities in education to go on to live the life they want.
Supplementary. What data and evidence supported this decision?
Mr. Speaker, a study by the University of Otago estimated that up to 95,000 young women could be missing school because of a lack of access to period products. This government is committed to reducing barriers for learners. I want to be clear about the link between attendance and achievement. Regular school attendance is essential for lifting student achievement. This announcement is just one of our plans to reduce barriers to attendance and lift achievement in schools.
Supplementary. What feedback has she received from the public?
Mr. Speaker, I've already received lots of positive feedback. Dignity New Zealand wrote to me expressing their relief and appreciation upon hearing our announcement. The Children and Young Persons Commission wrote, "I'm pleased to see the government making this investment to reduce barriers to school attendance and normalising this aspect of mokopuna health." One member of the public reached out to write that this increase in funding has created one less concern for young women in their school. We will continue to empower our young women to fully participate in their education without the burden of period poverty.
Supplementary. Who is going to benefit from this announcement?
Mr. Speaker, this initiative will continue to support 200,000 young women in our schools. A lack of access to period products can be stressful, disruptive, and can impact students' confidence and well-being. This is an issue of dignity. Young women should never have to miss out on their education or face the embarrassment because of something as simple as access to period products. This support will help families get their children to school feeling confident and supported so they are ready to learn and do their best. And yes, well, Mr. Speaker, it is targeted at young women who have periods.
Supplementary, the Honourable Gentinetti.
Is this policy for young women in intermediate, secondary and kura, as stated in the PR and the Minister today? And does that mean young people in other schools don't menstruate?
Mr. Speaker, I think I was very clear that it's available to young women in intermediate and kura and schools. There are no changes to the policy, apart from the fact that we're funding it an extra $500,000 a year to make sure that there are equal access to as many women as possible.
Question number 10, in the name of the Honourable Marama Davidson.
To the Prime Minister, does he stand by his statements and actions?
Yes, and in the context they were given.
Does he agree with the People's Review of Kainga Order in Defence of Public Housing report released today that, quote, the private housing market has failed to provide everyone with a decent, stable and affordable home. The state should have a stronger role in the ownership and provision of rental housing. And if so, what steps will the government take to increase the supply of publicly owned rental housing?
Well, I do agree. Housing has been an abject failure in this country after 6 years of the previous administration. What we have to do is increase supply of private houses, increase the supply of rental properties available, and increase the supply of social and state housing available as well. We've got plans to deal with all three.
Is he aware of the finding of the report that building good quality public housing at scale and pace can save government spending in the long term through reduced need for landlord subsidies and through savings in health budgets? And if so, does this suggest that increasing the supply of public housing is consistent with this government's stated commitment to social investment?
What did you do?
As I said earlier, we want to increase the supply of houses available in the private market, we want to increase the supply of houses available in the rental market, and increase the supply of houses available in the social housing part of the market too.
Is he concerned then at the ability of the private rental...
Wait on. Please. Start again.
Is he concerned then at the ability of the private rental market to provide New Zealanders with affordable housing when almost 350,000 people have to access the accommodation supplement because private rents are too high?
Again, I don't know how to explain this any differently to the member, but it's an and. We need to make sure that we have private housing made available to people who want to purchase homes. We need to make sure that we increase the rental supply of rental properties for people who need to rent them. And we need to increase the supply of social housing stock as well. It's an and, so that all three aspects of the housing market are actually accelerated.
Will he commit to ensuring that any changes to Kainga Order following the review are directed at creating a more efficient and effective build program to deliver public housing at scale rather than any wind down of existing projects?
We will await the findings of the review, but what we are clear about is that we want better performance from Kainga Order.
Submitting question.
What?
Supplementary question, right Honourable Winston Peters.
Has the Prime Minister received any reports about the gulf or gap he's going to have to fill, having inherited a 100,000 homes promise that ended up with 2,000 being built by the administration that the original questioner came from?
I think it's quite well established that Kiwi Build was an utter failure.
That's right. Barbara Davidson.
Why is he prioritising tax cuts for landlords instead of building more public housing?
We are committed to making sure that we build more houses in general in this country. That has been an absolute disaster under the previous administration. This government takes getting houses built seriously. We do that through the private market, the rental market and the social housing market.
Question number 11, in the name of the Honourable Jenny Salesa.
Kia ora, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Ethnic Communities. Does she stand by all her statements and actions?
The Honourable Melissa Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, in the context they were made and undertaken.
Supplementary. Does she stand by her statement that, and I quote, more than a quarter of our population in 10 years' time will be from ethnic communities, unquote? And if so, how does she reconcile that with the proposal to reduce the number of permanent staff at the Ministry of Ethnic Communities by 14%.
Mr. Speaker, there are currently about 22% of New Zealanders who actually belong to ethnic communities. However, you know, at a time when New Zealand is facing costs of living crisis, agencies have been asked to identify where they can make savings or make changes in order to deliver savings. Decisions related to staffing numbers at ministry are operational and budget sensitive.
Supplementary. Does she stand by her statement that the Ministry of Ethnic Communities has a budget analogous to, and I quote, the smell of an oily rag, unquote? And if so, how does she justify that with the ministry staff reducing by 14%?
I'm not so sure if the member is actually correct in suggesting that there is actually a 14% cut, because anything that is related to staffing numbers is actually for the ministry to actually answer, as it is operational. In terms of the ministry operating on a smell of an oily rag, the member should know, as the former minister.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. Speaker's ruling 182.
Slow down. Everyone wants to listen. Point of order, the Honourable Jenny Slessor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker's ruling 182/3 states that ministers have to answer on operational matters.
Well, just a minute. I'll just have a quick look at that. This one I'm not terribly familiar with. Okay, so ministries can't answer to the House. Only a minister can. So can I suggest that we have the question again with that in mind? And then the Speaker's ruling might apply.
Supplementary. Does she stand by her statement that the Ministry for Ethnic Communities has a budget analogous to, and I quote, the smell of an oily rag? And if so, how does she justify the ministry staff reducing by 14%?
Yeah, but that's the problem. She doesn't have to justify that. It's not her responsibility. So there must be another way of asking that question.
How can she justify, given that she made a statement that said the ministry is operating under the smell of an oily rag, the cuts to the ministry?
Well, it's the same problem, but we'll see what you can say.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are no cuts currently. Everything in relation to staffing numbers that the ministry are currently consulting, it is just that, consulting, and the decisions will be made as part of the budget process.
Supplementary. Will she commit to no cuts to the Ethnic Communities Development Fund, ECDF?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said, the decisions on the actual funding or staffing numbers, it is actually budget sensitive, and the decisions are for the ministry to answer. Having said that, the ministry does an amazing job. As the member who actually asked the question was a former minister, will well know, is a very small ministry who works very hard to support the work of the ethnic communities, and the Ethnic Communities Development Fund does amazing work to provide for the ethnic communities.
Mr. Speaker, does she agree with her coalition partner, Honourable David Seymour, when he stated, and I quote, "I very seldom find someone that can point to anything concrete that they've done," unquote, when talking about the Ministry of Ethnic Communities? If so, are these cuts a step towards abolishing the Ministry for Ethnic Communities?
Mr. Speaker, I don't have responsibility for Mr. Seymour's comments. However, I feel that Ministry of Ethnic Communities does an amazing job, and I support them 100%.
Question number 12, Catherine Wedd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Trade. What actions has the government taken to support trade with the Middle East?
Mr. Speaker, since taking office a few months ago, we've worked quickly with the United Arab Emirates to progress exploratory discussions on a possible comprehensive economic partnership agreement. In January, I travelled to the UAE to meet with ministerial counterparts, and again, the following month to attend the 13th WTO Ministerial Conference. While there, following constructive meetings with the UAE Trade Minister, New Zealand announced the start of public consultations on a possible SEPA with the UAE. Exploratory discussions between our two teams are progressing well, and a decision on launching negotiations will be taken later this year.
Supplementary. Why has the government asked for the public's view on an agreement with the UAE?
Well, Mr. Speaker, we're interested in what the public think. 73% of New Zealand's trade will be covered by trade agreements once the EU-NZ FTA enters into force on the 1st of May. However, an important gap in our FTA coverage is the Gulf region. The launch of public consultations represents a significant next step in New Zealand's ongoing consideration of a deal with the UAE, complementing the three rounds of exploratory discussions held to date. We're keen to hear from civil society, businesses currently exporting to the UAE market or with an interest in doing so, Māori exporters and all New Zealanders. Submissions are open until the 31st of March. Information on how to submit is available on the MFAT website.
Export economy.
Supplementary. How would an agreement with the UAE be important to New Zealand?
Mr. Speaker, the UAE is a top 20 export market for New Zealand and our largest market in the Middle East, with exports totalling over $1 billion last year. The UAE is also an important hub for New Zealand companies operating in the region and vital to New Zealand's connectivity to the Middle East and beyond. Other countries are progressing trade negotiations with the UAE, including Australia, who are expected to conclude a deal by the end of this year. So the government is committed to ensuring New Zealand exporters remain competitive in that market.
Supplementary. What else has he announced to support New Zealand trade?
Well, Mr. Speaker, our work towards the SEPA with the UAE will serve to further grow trade opportunities in Europe as goods and services exported to Europe transit through this busy Middle East hub and will do so more easily. Yesterday, the EU-NZ FTA gained royal assent, confirming that the deal will enter into force on the 1st of May. This is great news for our horticulture industry, and as the member asking the question will know, with the apple harvest in full swing, the onion harvest almost complete, and packhouses across the Bay of Plenty and the East Coast and elsewhere, packing for Europe, these industries will be able to see the immediate savings of the EU trade deal. Given the year that they've had, the cyclone recovery, this deal means a lot of our apples and onion exporters will do better.
Supplementary, the Honourable Damien O'Connor.
Thank you. Will the consultation process between on the proposed deal between the UAE and New Zealand be undertaken on the principles of trade for all, which includes obligation to consult with Māori, small, medium enterprises, with women and all groups across New Zealand to ensure that whatever trade deal is arrived at will benefit all New Zealanders?
Mr. Speaker, in I think my second answer to the second supplementary, I mentioned all of those groups, so yes.
That concludes oral questions.